All right, thanks, Travis. How many of you have gotten to the point ever in your lives where this phrase has applied to you? Or where this idea has entered your mind?
This morning.
Okay. The good old days. One of the things that happened at camp this summer, at my camp session, I had a 17-year-old boy who wanted to talk to me about some problems he was going through, and he told me in the course of the conversation that when he was young, he did this or that. And I thought to myself, how soon that phrase creeps into our conversation. And also, if that applied to him, then where did it fit with me? What kind of a mood is somebody normally in, or what kinds of moods may come up where that phrase enters into our thinking? How is somebody feeling when he thinks that way?
All right.
He may be bemoaning the situation in his life now and comparing it unfavorably to what it used to be. That's one. Can you think of some other, Brother Feeney?
The aged and the infirm.
All right. The aged and being aged and infirm may make us think that the best days in our lives are already lived. That idea may creep in. Can you think of some others? I think there may be a little bit. Okay, Gene.
When you forget about how tough it was back in the good old days.
All right. Maybe we are glorifying. Maybe we are forgetting the problems that we had in the good old days. That could be part of it. I think there is a little bit of anxiety about the future in that phrase, isn't there? Isn't there a little bit of a question looking forward how things are going to be in our lives? All of those things enter in, and they certainly are a part of our study today, because we are at the spot in Job where Job takes the time to look back at the good old days, and then he will use the phrase, "But now," and then he will make a declaration that turns out to be really important in this book, that the change between here and here is not because of anything, excuse my time in writing this, but not because anything I have done. Another way of saying it is, it's not my fault. And that is the issue in this book, isn't it? In the discussions between Job and his friends. Hasn't it been the case that ever since Job chapter 3, the enemy has in every possible way tried to make Job question his relationship with God? So where we are in this book now, if you remember, The first two chapters, the trouble that befalls Job comes because God has allowed the enemy to try the issue of whether a man will serve God just because he's God. In chapter 3, Job's whys start being voiced. Then in chapters 4 through 27, the conversations go back and forth between Job and his friends. They will say something to Job about how God rules as the sovereign in this world. And normally they will defend either God's justice, or they will call in question man's righteousness, or they will advise Job about the course he will take. Job responds that doesn't fit in his situation. And see, he's having to deal with pain, but he's having to question the reality in which he's always lived, or the assumptions, the faith assumptions that he's always had. And then, after Job speaks, what is it, chapter 26, his friends don't say anything else. And so Job rounds off what he said, and then there's the interlude on where wisdom is to be found in this situation in chapter 28. And now we're at the place, and I hope that we can survey these three chapters today, where Job, it's kind of like, I've never been in a trial, but I've seen them on TV. And it's kind of like when all the evidence has been presented, and then the advocates get to present the summary of their case. This is Job's summary of his case in these three chapters. So look, starting in chapter 29, and we'll try to break this down so we can survey it a little bit. In chapter 29, after his friends have not said anything, Job again takes up his discourse. And I'd like you to notice that the issue in Job's mind in the good old days is, I'll put it this way. In the good old days when God was with me, I think that's what he is saying. And that issue assumes what? I want you to notice how easily Job, while he's resisting the arguments of his friends, he falls in line with him. John?
If you say it that way, then you're saying that God is not with you at this time.
All right, that's first. How's that like what Job's friends have been saying, though?
Punishment's from God.
They've been saying that when God is with you, you prosper, and things are well with you, and so on. So look at the first six verses here, and let's think about them for a second. Linda, do you mind to read that passage for us? Verses 2 through 6, if you will. Yes.
How I long for the months gone by, for the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head, and by his light I walked through the darkness. Oh, for the days when I was in my prime, when God's intimate friendship blessed my house, when the Almighty was still with me and my children were around me, when my path was drenched with cream and the rock poured out for me the streams of olive oil.
All right, now look at that. The days when the light of God shined around me and the friendship of God was upon my tent and the Almighty was with me and my children were around me. And an alternate translation is, my steps were washed with butter and oil, which was a staple in the prosperous life. It was used for cooking. It was also used for hygiene and anointing, comfort, all of that. When all of that was with me. And in verse 4, when it says, when it's translated, I was in my prime, I'm told that the literal Hebrew with that would be my autumn days. There is something a little... there's a little melancholy in the very idea of that. You know, Job is longing sort of for those days. Now, what stands out to you? What do you hear in that reading that is paining Job the most as he considers the good old days in his life? All right, he believes that what he misses is the fellowship of God in his life, the blessing of God in his life. He feels like it's not there anymore. And that is the part that is bemoaning him. Now, you can follow the rest of the thought in this chapter with the words when and because. And notice that starting from verse 7 and going down to verse 17, there is Job's remembering of the position that he occupied in the community because God's favor was upon him in days gone by. All right? Watch for that as we read these next few verses. Becky, do you mind to read 7 all the way through 17?
When I went out to the gate of the city, when I took my seat in the square, the young men saw me and hid themselves, and the old men arose and stood. The princes stopped talking and put their hands on their mouths. The voice of the nobles was hushed, and their tongues stuck to their palate.
All right, I'm going to interrupt a couple of times here. What is Job remembering about the good old days in verses 7 through 10? All right, his status in the community, the kind of respect and esteem in which he was held. He, in other words, attach this to what went before. It was because people widely perceived that God was with him that he was treated with this kind of honor and this kind of respect. All right, Becky, go ahead now.
For when the ear heard, it called me blessed, and when the eye saw, it gave witness of me, because I delivered the poor who cried for help, and the orphan who had no helper. The blessing of the one ready to perish came upon me, and I made the widow's heart sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy, and I investigated the case which I did not know. And I broke the jaws of the wicked and snatched the prey from his teeth.
All right, now look at that. What do you hear in that section that Job is thinking about? All right, all the good he had done. What I hear is that the esteem and the honor, the hushed respect, the place that they gave to Job when everybody hushed when he walked by and everybody rose when he was in the... It wasn't because of dread or fear, but it was the respect of affection and esteem. And what I hear when I in those verses is that Job thinks of the time when he was needed in people's lives. When he could do something to help the poor and the fatherless and the widow, when everybody blessed him because he was a blessing, when he was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame and a father to the needy, and when he upheld justice and when he saw to it that the right thing was done. Is there anything that is more difficult in a person's grief than or is suffering than the feeling that he's not needed anymore? Brother Finney, have you ever had to visit somebody who's been through a loss and they thought there just was, or a sickness, or just they're just in the way now and not needed anymore? I've heard people say that before, and I think that's as much agony as anything I can see somebody go through. And I think that's what Job is saying here. You guys, have you heard that? Do you see what I'm getting at there? Okay.
Also, he's lost his status and respect, but some power or some kind of, I don't know, inner self-worth.
Yes. All right. He's lost the sense of his own value in that way. I had somebody say to me that I was visiting with just this week, I just don't want to be in the way. I don't want to be any trouble to my kids, that sort of thing. And that's very close to what Job is saying right here, I think. All right, now, verse 18 beginning, Job takes up how he always thought life would be back in those days. Back when God was with him and had his family and his prosperity and his health. And back in the days when he was an esteemed and honored and needed member of the community, he always thought, as he looked at his present and his future, how things would be. So let's read verse 18 and following here. Tim, do you mind to read? Or Dan, one of you?
Okay.
18 to, I may interrupt, but 18 to the end of the chapter 10.
Then I thought, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. My root is spread out to the waters, and dew lies all night on my branch. My glory is ever new with me. and my bow is renewed in my hand.
All right. Now, that's the summary of his thought and his expectation about what his experience would be. What, in short, what do you, how would you summarize what he's thinking there, what he's always thought to himself? Pardon?
I'm set.
All right, I'm set for life. He thought that he would, I like this, I'll die in my nest. All right, I'll be at my home. I'll live out my days. I'll have all the resources I'll need. I'll be refreshed every morning. I'll have my strength. I always thought that's how things would be. And have you ever heard anybody say to you, this is not how I thought things would turn out? I've heard people say that about their jobs, their family, their health, their everything. And he's dealing here with a reality that is everything opposite of expectations. This year when we were doing our graduates reception, Linda, you remember this? One of the young men had on there what the accomplishments had been, and then it had on there what the future plans were, and he had written it all out, and then it ended with, and live happily ever after. We don't say that, but that's what we all hope and expect, and that's what Job is saying here. All right, now, Tim, verse 21 beginning.
To me, they listened and waited and kept silent for my counsel.
All right, while Tim's reading this, I want you to think about what his friends, every time Job has spoken in this book, his friends have responded, and they've basically argued with the man who needed to be comforted. And think of that while Tim reads this. The people listened to me and waited and kept silence for my counsel. Go ahead, Tim.
After my words, they did not speak again, and my speech dropped on them. They waited for me as for the rain, and opened their mouth as for the spring rain. I smiled on them when they did not believe, and the light of my face they did not cast down. I chose a way for them and set as chief, and dwelt as a king among the troops, as one who comforted the mourners.
All right, you catch that last part? Where is he now? All right, he is the mourner, and when he speaks, what happens now? All right, he has no comfort, but instead of them listening to him in silence, they convict him instead of comforting him. And a great part of what Job is saying is that, and what he will say is what he's going through now doesn't fit with all of that. All right, your observations now, as Job thinks of the months and days of old when God watched over him, and how that feeling creeps into our experience sometimes, what are your observations about Job 29? Anything there stand out to you that you'd like to comment about or for us to talk about?
Well,
Becky?
I was thinking a lot. I read this earlier. I was thinking a lot about Tim's sister and just that. This isn't just words. This is a real hurt, painful warning, and just can't believe that it's really like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Russ?
You know, I think it's just kind of human nature that when things are good, you assume they're always going to be good, and when things are bad, you assume they're always going to be bad.
All right. We do sort of live with the assumption that things are always going to be this way. At least I always have. I don't know about you guys, but I know that this is the struggle the hurdle that's hard to get over in the process of coping with the hurt. And you can kind of see why, that I'm forsaken, that I'm useless, and I'm ignored. That's what you hear it being spoken in this chapter, I think. Anybody else? All right. Do you agree with me that this feeling is maybe the most painful part of the process? I kind of think this is a hurt worse than the physical hurt in some ways. And obviously, it causes, it's the juncture of great danger in a person's journey, because this is the situation where we can choose a wrong road very easily. We can turn our backs on even trying to find anything that matters at this point here. And we can decide just to end it all if we're not careful. And that's some of our families have been hurt by that kind of thing in past years. So you can see how important this is right now. Job is asking really whether there was ever really anything to his faith in God to start with. All right. Now, look at the but now, chapter 30. Let's survey it real quickly. But now, that contrasts so strongly with the old that I were in the months of old of chapter 29, verse 2. But now, they, and the key thing in the first 8 verses here is who the they is. I'd like you to think about this. But now they laugh at me, and listen to the last part of verse 1. Men who are younger than I, whose fathers I would have disdained to set with the dogs of my flock. Yeah, ooh, is right. What's he saying there? Instead of princes refraining from talking and laying on their hands on their mouth when I walked in, instead of the nobles being hushed and so forth, now they laugh at me. And I wouldn't, not only would I have not let them watch my flock, I wouldn't have trusted them to do that, I wouldn't let them sit with the dogs who watch my flock. That's about as bad as you could get, isn't it? Now listen to him as he describes them. What can I gain from the strength of their hands, men whose vigor is gone? Through want and hard hunger, they gnaw the dry ground by night in waste and desolation. They pick stalwart. I looked it up. Stalwart is or saltwort, it's a bush with a very bitter, the leaves have a very bitter taste to them. And the leaves of bushes and the roots of the broom tree, for the broom tree had long, hard strands to it. If you can imagine your spaghetti being made out of the broom tree, that would be what he's talking about here. They are driven out from human company. They shout after them as a thief. In the gullies of the torrents they must dwell, and the holes of the earth, the rock. In other words, they live in a den like an animal. Among the bushes they bray, under the nettles they huddle together. A senseless, nameless brood they have been whipped out of the land. Now, what's the point of Job calling them all of those names? There's a part of grief here in which he is comparing himself pretty favorably to the people who are laughing at him now. One thing about this is at least he can see who it is putting him down and being critical of him now. And the senseless, nameless brood has been driven out of the land, who now think I'm nothing and useless, and who They would have before come to me seeking help. Now then, they are laughing at me. Why is there hurt in the first words of verse 1 of chapter 30? Is this just a passing put down of other people, or is this a real part of what Job is going through, John?
Well, it seems like human nature that people take joy in when somebody who has done better than them have lost what they have gained.
All right.
So now he sees that these people are taking joy
in
his downfall.
Why does that hurt him so? But why is this the first thing he brings up? But now they laugh at me.
Because it's a contrast to the first verse.
All right. When he's already struggling with whether he has any significance left, then this kind of mockery and ridicule that says not only do we not care about you, but we kind of delight in, we kind of are making a game out of your agony in your life. I kind of think that's what's going on. Look at the "and now" statement from verses 9 through 15. All right, 9 through 15 now. We have somebody who likes to read. Do we have an ask to read? Or do I just get to continue calling on people? Verses 9 through 15, Travis, Jill. Travis was pointing to you, Jill.
Said she really wanted this.
One of my committee, you two read. Travis, you read that. I think by the look, you should read.
9 through 20?
Yes, 9 through 15.
"And now I've become their song. I am a byword to them. They abhor me. They keep aloof from me. They do not hesitate to spit at the sight of me. Because God has loosed my cord and humbled me, they have cast off restraint in my presence. On my right hand the rabble rise. They push away my feet. They cast up against me their ways of destruction. They break up my path. They promote my calamity. They need no one to help them. As through a wide breach they come, amid the crash they roll on. Terrors are turned upon me. My honor is pursued as by the wind. And my prosperity has passed away like a cloud."
All right. Now start at the bottom of that and look back up through it. First, my prosperity has passed away like a cloud. I'm taking the time for us to read through this because these three chapters are central to the meaning of this book. My prosperity has passed away. Now my honor has been pursued. That is a source of terror to me, verse 15 says. And the people, he pictures a big hole in the wall of protection around them, and he pictures hordes of enemies. You guys ever see the old cowboy and Indian pictures where the fort wall of the fort got burned down or whatever, and they started climbing over the wall or coming through the broken down gate? That's very much the picture here. And it's the rabble who are doing this. And look at the phrases he chooses to describe how they treated him here. Yeah, they spit at the sight of me. What does that, that's worse than spitting on him? Spitting at the sight of him. What's that mean?
Some says to be even spit at.
All right. He not only is the object of disgust, but the people don't just humiliate him, but he makes them sick. All right. They keep aloof from me. They think verse 10. "And I'm a byword to them." What is a byword? A bad word. All right. Yeah, I don't want you to give me one.
It was a weird word. It was a byword.
All right. Okay. All right.
They could say something like, "You don't want to fool a Job."
Yeah. All right. That's right. Or to be a Job,
to be
or something
a Job.
Like that. Even now, you see what's happened. The man who has been a man of honor is now the object of outwardly, socially, he's a reject and an outcast. All right. Now, in verse 16 beginning, I'd like you to notice that he turns inward here, and he starts by one thing I left out, verse 11 of chapter 30. Why is it that these people are treating him this way? What's the because?
It's God.
All right, because God has loosed my cord, which means God has taken down the cords of his tent, and he's humbled him. All right, now, verse 16 beginning, let's look through verse 20 now. "Now my soul is poured out within me. Days of affliction have taken hold of me. The night racks my bones. The pain that gnaws me takes no rest. With great force my garment is disfigured. It binds about me like the collar of my tunic. God, or he, has cast me into the mire, and I've become like dust and ashes." And now notice at verse 20, he turns to the more personal pronoun, and it seems to address God directly. "I cry to you for help." And what?
You do not answer me.
And you do not answer me. I stand, and you only look at me. Now, what I see in that, his soul being poured out within him means he feels like there's no life left in him. His days and his nights are full of suffering. His clothes feel like they're about to choke the life out of him, and he feels like that God is paying no attention to him. And which of that part, I think it all leads up to verse 20, in which in verse 20, the issue of the book is stated whether or not this is really the case. What really hurts Job most is not that people make fun of him or that he's a byword, but that it's thought to be because God has let it go of him. And what's hurting him is he cries out for help. What's the one thing, the one biblical promise we all treasure when we hurt?
God will not forsake.
All right. That God won't fail us or forsake us, that we can cast our cares on him because he's faithful, but he cares for you. Now, what's the one thing Job is struggling with most here? I cry out to you and you don't answer. That's the issue. Now, at verse 21, he makes this more personal. So let's read it a little bit. Aaron, would you like to read verse 21 beginning, please?
Okay. But you have become cruel to me. With the strength of your hand, you oppose me. You lift me up to the wind and cause me to ride on it. You spoil my success. For I know that you will bring me to death, into the house appointed for all living.
I want to break in there for just a second. Notice that there are two phrases here. You have turned cruel to me. Not only is God thought of as ignoring his cry, God is thought of as causing his pain here. And the only answer being you've got to ride it out. And in verse 23, look at what Job thinks the outcome of all this is going to be. What's the only thing he knows now about his life? He's going to die. Look at how death is pictured. How is death pictured in verse 23? All right, the house appointed for all living. And the New Testament says it's appointed unto man once to die, and after this, what? The judgment. And to Job right now, the judgment's his only hope. That's what he's crying out for. He feels like it's being ignored. Now, can you just end the story right there? Would you be comfortable if the book of Job ended with the period at the end of verse 23? No, and Job can't drop it there. Listen to what Aaron's about to read now. Verse 24 through 31, Aaron.
Surely he would not stretch out his hand against a heap of ruins if they cry out when he destroys it. Have I not wept for him who is in trouble? Has not my soul grieved for the poor? But when I looked for good, evil came to me. And when I waited for light, then came darkness. My heart is in turmoil and cannot rest. Days of affliction confront me. I go about mourning, but not in the sun. I stand up in the assembly and cry out for help. I am a brother of jackals and a companion of ostriches. My skin grows black and falls from me. My bones burn with fever. My harp is turned to mourning, and my flute to the voice of those who weep.
All right. Now, this is you talk about a contrast to the good old days, but it seems to me that starting at verse 24, Job is saying there has to be some meaning in what I've been through, though. And verse 24 gets to be a challenge to translate the original language in this case. The meaning can be like Aaron read it there, surely, the gist being surely God won't let it turn out this way. Or some suggest it should be translated, a person who's in a heap of ruins, doesn't that person still stretch out his hand for help? I mean, Job is saying, even though I know that the house of the death is the house appointed for all living, shouldn't I still reach out to see if I can find some help? So he says, didn't I weep for people who were going through this? When I hoped for good now, when I waited for light, darkness came, evil came. And the unfairness of that has been what that Job has been arguing with his friends throughout all of this. And now notice his hurt, his inward parts, his going about day by day. Verse 28, I think it's touching where he says, I stand up in the assembly and cry out for help. Notice what he said. In verse 20, I cry to you for help and you do not answer me. And I forgot to look up whether that you is a plural or a singular, whether he's talking to his friends or whether he's talking to God. I take it God. In verse 28, I stand up in the assembly and cry for help. I've asked people for help, but he has no companions. He has no help. He has no joy in his life at this point. This is a dark moment, isn't it? But notice chapter 31, and I got no time to do this, but let me just point out to you that this is Job's oath of clearance, his final appeal, his strength and triumph even against the background of what all he's said so far. And what he does is to maintain his integrity here. He still argues that this could not be because of anything that he's done. And let me just point out to you, the if and then motif is what you notice down through this. He argues that he's kept his outlook pure because he believes, verse 4, that God sees his ways and numbers his steps. He says in verse 5 that if he's walked with falsehood, if he's done any deceit, he believes he ought to be that all people ought to be weighed in the balance. Verse 6, if his step has turned aside in the wrong direction, if there's been any spot that stuck to his hands, then he says, let me sow and another eat. Let what grows from me be rooted out. What's he saying there? He's calling down the curse of the covenant on himself. Covenant that God hadn't even made with Moses at this time. But I made a covenant, he says, so if there's been any dishonesty in me, then let me sow and another reap. Has the bell rung yet? You guys hear it? Okay. It is time for the bell to ring. Well, this can be, I'll use this for an introduction to our next class then. I need to take a little time. We need to take a little time. Especially, I want to encourage you guys to read, especially verses 35 through 40 in this chapter where it says the words of Job are ended, and think about what the implications of that are to this book. I appreciate you guys being with us today. I hope it's the beginning of a good week. And don't forget to enjoy your once in 823 years, 3 days in. All right, thank you guys.